And we welcome you into our continuing series. It is the Heart of the Emergency Worker podcast series located on Branson Podcast Network. And it is powered and presented by our dear friends at Arvest Bank. I am joined by my co-host and creative mind behind the series. She birthed this podcast. Absolutely amazing. The lovely Pam Yancey, who for this episode, depending upon when you're listening to it, it is the birthday girl, Pam Yancey. First things first, happy birthday and welcome in to episode 2.
Thank you, Josh. You know how much I love you and I appreciate you remembering my birthday.
I am so excited
to be here today. I love co-hosting this podcast with you. We have a lot of fun, but we really dive into the heart of the people who are out putting their lives on the line each and every day. And so bringing their stories and bringing them to life and putting a face, with a job or whatever. So I'm really excited to be here. Love the series. We've got some great people in the studio with us today. So I'm just really excited to learn more about them.
Absolutely. And I could not have said it any better. When we get a chance to tell those stories and with our special guests as we were preparing for episode 2, we were just talking about that fact that we have the opportunity through this series to uncover the unsung heroes, put the faces to the story, gain a new level of appreciation, patience, and I got to tell you, the amount of feedback that we've been getting from the community. Steve Willoughby was mentioning to me over the last couple of days that he's been getting a lot of calls, a lot of emails, people wanting to find out how to nominate a hero for the Heart of the Emergency Worker podcast, but also just being appreciative of us taking the time to put this series together and tell the stories. And coming back to my word patience and understanding. In some fields, when it comes to first responders, those that serve the community, patience is something that is not often found sometimes when you link that word to inconvenience. But I tell you what, when you go in and you unpack the story and you put faces along with that, we can develop patience and understanding really easy. And I'm talking about electrical services. I'm talking about when storms come through Ozark Mountain country. And my dear, you've lived here long enough like I have. We have seen some storms. When wintertime hits in the Ozarks and ice is afoot, it brings the town to a standstill. Mm-hmm. And there's no worse situation than when we find a level of inconvenience at home or we find ourselves in the worst situation we could have. We're without power or a loss of property. That's a difficult thing.
It is. And I think because it's an inconvenience, we sometimes forget that there are real human beings that have to go out and work in the bad weather under horrible conditions, life-threatening conditions.
Yes, ma'am.
So that they can work and get your power restored so that you can go about with your normal life. And so I think for me, the motivation is just remember to be kind. And, with patience, kindness has to come along beside that. And then gratitude. Be thankful that we actually have people that are willing to go out and do these jobs so that we can continue, to do what we need to do every day.
And we go inside the spotlight in episode 2 on the Heart of the Emergency Worker podcast series with one of the biggest energy providers in the Ozarks. It's a name that we all know very, very well. And it's funny me sitting behind the mic for episode 2 because I am a customer of this provider, a very happy customer that uses this portal regularly. They take good care of me and I keep an eye on outage maps from time to time when I need to. But I tell you what, service has been consistent. I say good morning to Junior Shook. Junior, welcome to the Heart of the Emergency Worker podcast series. It's our opportunity to go inside Liberty and put some faces to the incredible service that you and your team and the company provides to the Ozarks. Welcome.
Thank you. Well, we appreciate you guys having us. And this is something that we deal with on a day in and day out basis. These two guys that I'm going to be introducing here just a little bit, they are boots on the ground, been in the air. And they know what it's all about. I was a lineman for about 4 years. So, I got a little bit of that introduction as well.
Yes, sir.
So, we've seen it first and forehand. So first of all, thank you and Pam for having us, and let us tell a little bit of our story and what we deal with on a day in, a day out basis. So, I'm going to be introducing Dusty Smith. He is one of our foremen. here in the local Branson area. We're located, fantastic. Our storeroom is located locally over by the Hollister High School off of BB Highway. And then we have Eric White. He's the manager of the line operations. So, you know, he does all the coordination, schedules all the work. And then, you know, like I said, if we have a problem, he's pretty much in the storeroom 24/7 until we get it resolved. So
frontline communicator.
Absolutely.
So let me just ask you real quick before we welcome Dusty in. I mean, obviously with Liberty and obviously being a lineman for 4 years out of your career, when did Liberty and electrical work first come calling for you in your career? How young were you when you got started?
You know what? I was actually, I was self-employed for about 26 years. Yeah. My family owned a landscaping company.
Okay.
Here locally as
different.
Well. So, and then when my dad decided to retire, I thought, you know what, you know, landscaping is a pretty hard road, and I don't know that I want to do that for the rest of my life. So
it's not easy.
It's not easy. So I'd had an opportunity a couple of different times to go to work for, it was Empire District Electric at the time when I came on board, and in 2004. Mm-hmm. And so a good friend of mine worked, and he said, just give me a shot. You know, just let me talk to you about possibly going into another career and let's sit down and have a conversation. So, but being self-employed with dad, you know, I was obligated to the company itself. And so I didn't even have the conversation with dad, you know, when it first became available. So, so dad completely retired, and I did it for another 3 or 4 years. And I thought, you know what, this is a rough road. It really is. And so good friend came back and said, hey, going to give you another shot to come to work for Empire District Electric. And I said, okay. Well, I said, well, we'll have the discussion. Now, mind you, I had not had this discussion with my wife, and I knew what she would tell me. So,
and can I stop you there?
Sure.
I want to ask,
yeah,
when you had that discussion, what was the initial reaction?
With my wife or with my dad?
Let's go with both. Let's start with wife first, and then we'll go to dad.
Well, I had the discussion first with dad.
Yes.
Because that was my priority. You know, I mean,
Did he tell you to go ahead and talk to the boss?
He did.
Okay.
Yeah, in matter of
good
fact.
Man.
Yeah, he did. And, you know, because and he said, were you reluctant in having this conversation with me? And I said, absolutely. You know, because I just felt like, you know, that you wouldn't want me to do that. You know, you don't want me to continue the path that that you had created and started. And he kind of basically told me, you know, well, you're an idiot if you don't take that, you know, if you don't take that opportunity.
That's sage and direct advice.
It is
right there.
You know,
mm-hmm.
it is. And so, but he understood,
yeah,
you know, why I was reluctant on having that conversation. So. So the second time it came around, I had the discussion with my wife at this time. And, she said, did you talk to your dad about it? And I said,
they were thinking of each other.
Yeah.
Now, how cool is that?
I love that.
How cool is that?
They were. And she said, we did, you know, I did have that conversation with dad. And she said, what'd he say? And he said, I'm an idiot if I don't, you know, at least sit down and take a look at it. And she said, that answers your question right there. And I said, what do you think about it? And she said, well, she said, it could be another career, you know, benefits are good. You can have a retirement.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't even gotten to that point, you know, with my friend. And I said, you know, I said, that's good. Because if you've never worked for another company and you don't know how that works, you don't know. So anyway, I went and had the conversation with my friend, and he said, I'll get you an interview set up. And I said, you have to understand that, you know, I have contracts out through the middle part of the next year that I'm obligated to finish.
To finish, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know how long you can wait on me, you know, to come aboard with Empire, but... you know, it's going to be at least 6 or 7 months before I can do that. So, he said, well, that may be a problem, you know, just being honest with you about it. It could be a problem.
It's good transparency.
So it is. And so I went and interviewed for it and, you know, told him what the situation was and the director of HR at the time, she said, I don't know if I can hang on that long. And, I said, well, that's fine. And so I interviewed and they called me back and said, we'll wait on you to show up when you can show up.
Holy cow.
That's right. Awesome.
That's a rare thing. I don't care what field you're in or any job. That's a rare thing. That's a rare grace to be offered.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we were lucky that following the next winter, or the January, February, March time period, we had very moderate weather. We didn't have ice. We didn't have, we didn't have all the things that can shut a landscaper down.
What a time to come in and not be tested in that way. So, yeah, wow.
Absolutely. You bet. So I was able to go in. We were able to go in and get that work knocked out within a 4-month period as opposed to a 7-month period.
So you shortened your window then of having to wait.
Yep. So once the contracts were obligated and fulfilled, then that's when I went to work for it was actually in March of 2004. It was my official start date.
Pam, one of the things that I think I want to ask Junior before we let Dusty come up, I just got to ask. I mean, obviously, you were in the field as a lineman, so you know, you've seen it. You've seen the jobs at probably their most difficult to the most easiest. Talking to community members out there that are otherwise, uneducated, they don't know the ins and outs of the business. They don't know what it's like out there in the field. If you had to define it, what would be just a common misconception that the public just doesn't get about the line of work that you do?
Well, for me, and everybody can answer this in a different because I work for Liberty in a different, in a different role now. I'm the manager of business and community development. But, when I was a lineman, we were right in the middle of doing the Branson Landing. That was, full scale. For me, I think one of the misconceptions that people perceive through a utility company is, there's a lot of different things that I think that are relevant to what we do that people don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And one of those is tree trimming. I'll give you an example of tree trimming. The way it works, is when we do an extension, we get with that property owner and we have to get right of way to build a line into the project. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's multiple property owners that we're dealing with, to do that. And, we live in the Ozarks and we have a lot of trees. We have a lot of vegetation here and people like trees and vegetation. That's a barrier. That's a sound barrier. That's privacy. Mm-hmm. A lot of people look at it different, in different ways. But once our construction planner gets the design, they have to go in and we call in a vegetation crew and they blow that vegetation out to build that line.
Yeah.
And, a lot of people don't like that. They like the trees and so forth and so on. So, that's one issue, that we deal with. Another issue we deal with is, traffic control, that can be a problem within itself because these guys, when they're out on a job, they're working along a major corridor somewhere, they have to do traffic control. And for me, that was one of the most dangerous things about a job, especially like along the Branson Landing or 76.
You got a high volume of cars coming through there. Yeah,
you do. And they can be a little bit disrespectful because, mm-hmm. That's a tight corridor down there anyway.
Yeah.
A lot of traffic comes through there. So traffic control is another one. But all in all, I can't say that I've really had a bad experience in the field with a customer. And I think that they just want to be heard. And so a lot of times we would just step aside, address what they were concerned about, and then they kind of understood where we were coming from and what we needed to do.
And I imagine, too, as your career has evolved, I mean, obviously, being out in the field, I mean, obviously, if you get a complaint or somebody just wants to be heard and you guys are kind of that first face, you become a sounding board, if you will.
We do. Yeah.
And I think about community engagement, community growth, community development as well. That gives you an opportunity to just, okay, what can we do about the service aspect? What can we have done a little bit differently? Or perhaps this person, if they're a sounding board and they're telling you what they want you to hear,
right?
That can enhance a service in a way.
It does, and that all comes hand in hand. Mm-hmm. these guys right here, I mean, they do a phenomenal job. I think what I'm most proud of, coming from the fields that I've came from into the position, is the communication that we have.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, I think that's a lot of our success is how we communicate, because if something comes up or I know of something that could become an issue, which it typically don't, you know, I'm on the phone with a foreman or I'm on the phone with Eric, you know, and we coordinate a lot. And I think they can contribute to this, the conversation as well once they come on. But, you know, communication for us, that's crucial. And
Pam, any points for Junior?
No, I just think communication is key for everything.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
I think that's a lot of people want to do a lot of talking, but very few people want to listen, right? And
right.
So it is important, even in banking. You know, if you have someone that comes in and they're upset about something, 9 times out of 10, if you just sit down with them and listen to them and acknowledge their, you know, their issue, you know, it just changes the whole tone. And so, so I applaud you all for making that effort, you know, when somebody may be upset or maybe not the nicest person. I can only imagine some of the things when you were talking about the traffic control, you know,
sure,
that
yeah.
you all might
right.
have seen, some of the waves you all might have had or whatever,
right.
you know. But I applaud you all for, you know, giving a little bit of grace, right? We have to have a little bit of grace in our heart and kind of put ourselves in the other person's shoes so that we can understand and respond. But listening is I tell everybody it's a lost art, but we all need to practice it more. So
it is, and you know, people, you know, we can't take it personal, even though they, you know, sometimes they want to make it personal, but it's not about me and it's not about that person at that given time.
If
you have a problem, let's do what we need to do to get it resolved. And we may not come to terms 100%, but we'll find a common denominator. And we'll fix it to the best of our ability. And, you know, that's the majority, that resolves the majority of the issues that we have.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Pam's right. You know, a lot of people just want to be heard because, you know, if you have a corporate office, you know, up in Joplin, which we have, they don't think that they have a local voice here. And what we want to tell them is you do. You know, my office is downtown Branson, and if they have a problem or they want to have a discussion about something, we're open. You know, that my phone is on 365 days a year, 24/7. So, and I'll be more than happy to have a conversation with you about it.
To frame up the day for a worker within the electrical service here in Ozark Mountain Country. This is going to be a question, Pam, that I'm going to be asking both Junior. I'm going to ask Eric and Dusty the same one. So the boys over here that are not in the hot seat yet will have a chance to think about their answer. But when you got started and you left landscaping behind and you started out with Empire and Empire became Liberty, take me inside the most difficult day that Junior Shook ever had in the business. I want the community to kind of understand what a very challenging day would be like for you, whether it was out in the field or in the office, just so we can gain a better understanding, have a big appreciation. What would you say would be your most challenging day you've had in service?
The Joplin tornado. Yeah.
Tell me about that. That was literally an all hands on deck. I remember the news reports coming out. The damage was staggering.
It was.
The recovery, equally staggering.
Correct.
You looked at the sheer volume and the metrics and the numbers of outside agencies that were coming to Joplin. Now, this was our area, but, I mean, we're talking out of state.
Sure.
My mind can't even fathom. I mean, kind of frame that for me. And that is a very big thing to bring up.
It is. And, you know, I was a construction planner at that given time in that part of my career. And, so we received a phone call about 1 o'clock that following morning, and I believe that tornado came through about 5:30, somewhere around in there. So we received a phone call, all hands on deck, you know, from the construction planners to go up and do a damage assessment. We had kind of heard, you know, through the grapevine and been watching the news. But, you know, Josh, till you get up there and you see the magnitude of the damage that F5, I believe, tornado came through there.
When you pulled up for the first time, what was that like? I mean, because
it was devastating.
Town, I remember, yeah. I said this myself over and over again.
Right.
Joplin was gone.
Joplin was gone for the most part. I believe that it was and I don't want to misquote, but I believe it was a mile and a half wide And it pretty much came right through the center. It came east to west, or from west to east, pretty much in the heart of Joplin. And we really didn't, I couldn't grasp that because at the time that we got there, like I said, it was early, you know, that following mm-hmm. morning. And, we had a big, room in there and we were going over the details of what we needed to do and so forth. But when daylight came and we began to see, you know, the damage and we were out doing the assessments, I'll be honest with you, I had to pull over and I broke down. You know, I mean,
it's safe to say that when you saw that and then daylight came and you saw the full scope.
Right.
I mean, folks, we're talking about our local heroes, our workers that are out in the field every day. But when you see that for the first time.
Right.
And you're going to be okay if you respond this way to mm-hmm. me. Because it's human.
It is.
Did you feel hopeless when you saw the scope of the damage?
I didn't.
A little bit.
I didn't feel hopeless. I felt like, you know, that I knew what we were in for as a utility company.
Yeah.
But that was the least of my worries. You know, it was the It was the local people.
Mm-hmm.
You know that I
that
felt
spirit.
For the spirit, the homeowners, the businesses, the churches, the schools. You know, that had been impacted during that tornado. And, you know, I was there for 3 hours. And, I mean, he hit me. I'll be honest with you.
Oh, my gosh. And see, I can't even – and to understand the business better, you see something like that. I mean, you had a town. The town's gone. You are starting with zero framework.
Correct.
So when you're looking at tackling a grid for homes, that's one aspect. Mm-hmm. Business is another.
Mm-hmm.
Putting the hospital back together.
Correct.
I mean, I can't even process. I mean, you're having to remap out lines. You're having to dig. You're starting over.
And that's exactly what we were doing, but more so it was, you know, the homeowners, the businesses,
yeah.
the hospitals, the schools. You know, when I say devastation, I mean they were flattened. You know, I meant gone.
What is that like for you to kind of go outside of your comfort zone? I mean, obviously, you know what you know in the business,
mm-hmm.
and you're working on electrical services. You're working on restoration. That's a part of that process.
Right.
But what did that make you feel like? I mean, I'm sure, and you had this situation where you come across family members that are assessing wreckage, and you're not an electrical man anymore. You're a person that's there to embrace somebody or tell them that it's going to be okay. Did you have those moments? And if so, what was that like? Just stepping outside your field and just being junior should.
Right, right. You know, I did. You know, for me, I had to get over the initial shock of what I was seeing, you know. And I wasn't directly impacted, you know, like those people were. And, you know, when you get out there and you're driving and doing your assessing and you see, you know, people digging through debris and vehicles, you know, I couldn't even fathom what they were looking for. I didn't even want to go there. I didn't even want to take my mind there on what they were looking for. You know, it was obvious,
mm-hmm.
you know, because we were there pretty early in the stages of the tornado. And, you know, you should have just seen the devastation on their faces. I mean, they were still in shock,
yeah.
you know, on what they had witnessed and, you know, and what they were going to have to do to get to the next step. You know, I can't even fathom. You know, what was going through their mind at that time. So, and you know, I saw, not myself, but, I mean, we just came together as a group, as a utility company. And whatever was needed within that community, we tried to step up and take care of that. And, you know, for me personally, it was, you know, if it was, you know, there was a lot of times when we'd be doing, you know, an assessment, if we saw an elderly lady out there, you know, trying to pick up some debris or, you know, whatever she needed or whatever he needed or whatever they needed, you know, if we had the time to do that and we made the time, you know, to me, that was more important than doing the assessment. I mean, we had our job to do, but, you know, you get out on the outer lying areas where, you know, in the outer bounds of this, and that wasn't where the heart of the, you know, the work was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we were able to step up and do the best we could with it. And whatever how we needed to plug in to help whoever it was, then that's what we did.
To me, that is the heart of Ozark Mountain
worker.
Country
yeah.
and the heart
yeah.
of the emergency worker, right? The frontline emergency worker. So I think you took a little bit of Branson culture and you took it and you shared it with some people that needed it in Joplin. And so we appreciate,
and it's
we
not,
appreciate that.
It's not too often that we get an insider's look. Junior, I just want to say thank you again for being on this episode and leading us off very, very well. I'd love you to introduce again, Dusty Smith. We'll bring him up here. We'll put him in the hot seat and we'll go inside his life and career. So I'd love you to introduce him if you would.
Yeah, glad to do so. We're going to bring to the hot seat, as Josh called it, Dusty Smith. Dusty's been with the company for, I'll let him tell you how long he's been with the company, but he has his current role is a foreman for our local line ops. And I'll introduce Dusty Smith.
All right. Dusty Smith joining us here on the Heart of the Emergency Worker podcast. Again, a member with Liberty Utilities. And Dusty, as you lean in close to that mic there, my friend, I just want to say welcome again. And obviously, Junior set us up very, very well talking about his most difficult day in the business. For you, have you always had electricity running through the family, if you will? Was that always a calling for you? And what were you doing before you joined up with Liberty?
Thank you, Josh. No, I have not a legacy lineman. I've got a lot of friends and colleagues in the business that have been, you know, family ties or something of that nature. That's not my story. I actually got back. I got back from Afghanistan in 2011. Did a year over there, and so. When I got back, I wanted to get into some kind of trade, some kind of field. I'd went to college playing baseball, but that didn't work out. I tore my shoulder up, and so I said,
"Oh my gosh,
let's get into a field where I can be productive, you know, build a career." And I went into like limestone quarries and concrete production, things like that. And I did that for a while, and then I had a really good friend, actually, ironically, the very same friend that Mr. Shook was talking about, hit me up about being interested in a position at this company. And I said, "I'd love to." I'm not sure what qualifies me, though. I don't know anything about it. I can change light bulbs. You know, that was a good start.
we
can all do
ourselves
that.
There, yeah.
Right. So, see, you've already discredited me. I'm not that qualified. So I didn't put that on my resume, but I just went to the interview that they actually set up for me, and they were very gracious. I was very humbled by it. I told them, I said, I can respect what we're doing because I know what it's like to work with dangerous materials, you know,
yes,
being
sir.
In the Army. But other than that, I don't know anything about it, but I'm ready to learn. And apparently, I don't know if I wore the right shirt or what it was, but they were convinced at that time to give me a shot, and I was very humbled by it. So I've been doing this for about almost 7 years now. They gave me a shot.
7 years. Wow. And so you had the right people around you to bring you into this field. And Pam, I want to say first to Dusty, thank you for giving your time and your life for your country. That is a high
Absolutely.
Honor. I cannot say thank you enough. For making that a part of your life and making that decision to do that is amazing. I want to say thank you for starting off with that. But so seven good years. So obviously lineman to foreman. So obviously you're putting in the hours. You're doing the yeoman's work, and you made some good impressions there. Let me ask first about being a foreman. So in your purview, how does that change your daily life, and what are the realm of responsibilities there for a foreman there within Liberty?
So from a foreman aspect, I've tried to embody this in the military as well, and I do it here at Liberty the best I can, which is I believe firmly in servant leadership. I need to make sure that the apprentices or the linemen that I have on my crew, I'm trying to do everything I can to help them success, to have them achieve their goals, right, with the apprenticeship, trying to work through their stages and steps to progress to a journeyman status. And then the same thing is just trying to facilitate, making sure that I'm thinking ahead for them and making their lives easier, right? That doesn't mean I stand back and tell them to go shovel that or go do this, right? Mm-hmm. I jump right in the middle of it with them and lead by example, right? And never ask them to do anything that I'm not willing to do.
I love that. I love that leadership acumen right there. How good does it make you feel as a foreman, people that you have engaged with, you're out in the field with, you're working side by side. When you see the journeymen come up, they advance through those levels and they're finding success alongside you and your team in Liberty. What's that like for you personally when you have that success, seeing your people that you work with elevate themselves?
I think it's just a good reminder where I came from, you know, because I came in here, like I said, ready to change the light bulb, you know, and I had great guys that I was able to learn from, that were able to teach me, that I could learn from, and they basically helped adapt and mold my work style and work ethic and my knowledge and my depth as a lineman. And so I just see it kind of coming full circle, right? You know, to whom much is given, much is expected. And so I figure if I've been given all this, you know, very humbly, then I want to return it the best I can, you know, better than it came to me. So
Now, obviously, kind of go inside family life for you. Got to ask these questions as well. Now, are you a married man? If so, do you have kids?
I sure am. I'm very blessed. I've been married to my wife for a very long time. We've got three boys. Our oldest is actually getting ready to graduate high school. So that's
congratulations,
that's
Dad.
Pretty
that's
wild.
Awesome,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah, coming up in just a few short weeks.
So. you are right there.
Yeah.
So going back to military time and then making that decision, obviously as husbands in the family, we make those discussions. We have those important talks with people that are important to us. Did you have the same kind of discussions that that Junior had about going down this road, especially choosing to go in and serve the military, but also making the decision to go to Liberty? Did you have those discussions, and what were they like for you as a family man?
Yeah, so looking back at I'll start with the military decision. That was a tough one with my wife and I because she had her brother-in-law. That was more of a legacy thing, like you asked at the beginning about the electrical side. Her brother, which is my brother-in-law, and his wife had actually been in for a significant amount of time, and she was coming up on a retirement from active duty. And so we had a really good case study from both perspectives, and we were able to talk with them and work through that. And that was a decision that seemed really heavy, but once we realized that we had people available to rely on and pepper with questions and get that wisdom and insight, we were able to come to a decision that I should do it, and it would be great for our family, and that we should pursue it. So we did that. And so if you fast forward to when I was going to get into this line of work, my good friend that had been doing this forever had plenty of stories. You're going to miss holidays. You're going to miss birthdays, Christmas. Like you're never going to be home for that, so you might as well get used to it, you know. And so his wife was actually kind of confiding in my wife all of those, you know, horror stories. She's like, it's
as
a great
they do, the wives talk and the men talk, right?
Absolutely.
That happens. It's a real thing. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, us girls like to get together and share our stories with each other.
Right. Yeah, I hear that. I know for sure that she was getting earfuls from all different angles about it.
Oh,
and,
man.
And it was something that we had came to the conclusion of. She actually told me, she said, well, you're gone all the time with the Army anyway. You know, our middle son was born while I was in Afghanistan. So she's been down this road. She said, at least you'll be home most of the nights. You know, some nights you may be gone, but why not? You know,
and so she was prepped mentally from the past.
Yes, okay. A lot of our friends have told us. It's funny you bring it up because they said you'd make him choose, right? Like he can be in the Army or he can be a lineman, but he can't do both. You know, because I'm still in the reserve status now, so I go, you know, once a month, and then, you know, 2-3 weeks out of the summer, you know, sometimes a month depending on the assignments. So it just becomes a lot for her to keep up with, and she's a blessing. She handles everything within our household, like I'm there or not, and I couldn't do what I do without her for sure.
I'm going to just say, I think you're a very special young man to do the things that you do, but it takes a very special woman in your life to support you and give you the confidence, the courage, and really the freedom to go do the things that you're passionate about. So I'm
going
to give a big
that.
Shout out to your wife. I'm sure she's amazing. And those three boys. It also, it's not just your wife that's impacted. It's your kids when you miss the holidays and stuff. So, you know, it takes a special, special family to be able to do that. And I want to go back to something you mentioned earlier, servant leadership.
Yes.
I love that word. To me, that is the greatest gift that someone can possess. You can be a leader, but to be a servant leader is totally different. That's the hands and the feet, right? Mm-hmm. That's the eyes, the ears, the hands, the feet. And willing to work beside, you know, I think you said, I'm not going to ask them to do anything that I'm not willing to do. And I love
that. Get your hands dirty.
And again, just another core culture value that is just so prominent here in Ozark Mountain Country.
Yeah.
Why it makes us, I tell everybody, we're a little bit different and we're dang proud of it. And I think those qualities is what's are the things that makes us a little different, and I hope they never change. So shout out to your wife and to your sons.
Your decisions, Dusty, too, as you carry yourself, to kind of bookend what Pam was saying as well, it breeds respect amongst your peers and those that you work alongside. It's a very smart move to do. And going back to your wife and your three amazing kids, going out there into the field, and I know now, and I've got more respect as this series is going to go on, as I learn more about people's stories and what the job is like. Your wife has gotten prepared, obviously, to say goodbye to you for an extended period of time. And as much as there may be a joke in it, oh, you prepared me for this and all this stuff, it's not easy to say goodbye, at the start of a day, because nobody knows how long the hours are going to be. I got to ask, since you started working with Liberty, what's the longest day that you've had out in the field that you've had to be away from your kiddos and from your wife?
It's not that long ago. It was right around Christmas this last year.
Oh, man.
I'm sure all the listening audience, you know what I'm talking about.
Tell us about it. Take us back.
So, yeah, we had the extreme deep freeze. Seems like 2 years in a row now. We've just been hammered with all this climate adaptation in the area with, stuff that we're not prepared for.
Yep.
We can't handle that kind of extreme cold, and so we're trying to do the best we can. And when that stuff happens, it's not as simple as just going out and flipping a switch, right? I mean,
no,
we're talking
not.
Mass outages, right? Mm-hmm. And when that happens, then we're digging in, right? Pulling your boots up, and you got to figure it out. And so I started work on one day. It was like a Thursday, I think it was, 7 a.m., and I did not get off until the next day at... What was it? I think Eric, you told me to go home at like 10:30 the next day?
Almost noon.
So that was, 27, 28 hours. And that's like the day before Christmas or whatever. So not ideal.
Can I expand on that a little bit?
Sure.
That you say it like that, and it's astronomical to me. That is a long, long day. I want to go a little bit further. In the middle of all that, it's a deep freeze. I'm just going to go ahead and add icy conditions. You guys are out in that. I know you have lived that. How does sleep happen? How do you deal with fatigue? And especially if the road conditions are not great, what is that like for you to get in that headspace that, I mean, how do I handle a road? How do I handle a curve? I mean, there's so many variables in that. I got to ask about that.
Oh, sure. No, it was definitely cold. That's the coldest time I've spent working.
We're talking sub-zero.
Sure.
I mean.
Yeah, it was wind chills well below zero. I was, doing a lot of things where you would have to do it in shifts. We'd get in and out, kind of rotate, always have somebody with you.
Yeah.
You've heard the stories about Australia, right? Like everything's trying to kill you over there.
Yeah.
It kind of felt like that here. It was like Merry Christmas. if it's not the icy roads, it's going to be the wind
Enjoy
chill.
Your holiday.
Right. And if it's not the wind chill, then it's going to be, the ice you slip on. And if it's not going to be that, then it'll be a tree limb that's frozen. And then we're dealing with, high voltage. So it was just your heightened sense of focus is definitely there, right? Everybody's plugged in, and there's just a different level of mentality, right? Eric's trying to coordinate tons of stuff. We've got circuits going out like crazy. We've got we only had so many people to spread out, and he's trying to prioritize and juggle all that. And so there's just a lot of moving parts, but it's a lot of, once you get to that tempo, that operational pace where you're just, you're in it, you don't really have time. Kind of like Junior said, he wouldn't allow himself, certainly, in Joplin to go into that scope. It's like, stay in your tunnel, get your stuff done. And so that's what we really do. But when you get home finally and it's time to go to sleep, amen. Because I slept for a while.
And you get that amen, and that is a good team effort between you and your wife. But I imagine you get home at the end of some of those shifts, and they're so ridiculously long. Sometimes Dusty Smith doesn't get a chance to check out of dad mode. And I can't imagine how tough that is for you. It's kind of like, I can shake off this 20-plus hour day to pick up my kids, pick up my sons, give them a hug, and slip into dad mode for a little bit, even though every bone in your body says, I gotta crash. I can't imagine what that's like.
Oh, sure. Yeah, you definitely have responsibilities. The last thing you want to do is come home after a shift like that and, give your wife a hug and say, I'm going to bed. And she's like, I've been dealing with these kids the whole time you've been gone. Which might be easier to do what I was doing, to be honest with you, because I know my sons. So I might have got the easier end of the stick on that. So it's a tough balance, but at the same time, you have to make intentional efforts to prioritize time with your family, right? There are times, like with my son going through his senior year, right? I wasn't taking calls on his Friday night football games. I said, if something goes down, guys, you can do it without me. I'm not going to be available. His graduation's coming up. There's certain things I'm just not going to miss, because I've had to miss enough things moving on that I only get one more shot with this. He's going to be gone soon and going to college, and I just think it's a healthy perspective that, somebody will get those lights on, and I'm willing to do it. But, there are times where you've got to choose your family over the job.
I love that. And I have to go back to when you were talking about when you got called out. Okay, right before Christmas, right?
Yeah.
And the first thought that was my, I hope he had all of his Christmas shopping done. I hope he wasn't a last-minute shopper, because, there was going to be some disappointed people if that. But I'm sure your wife probably pulled up and probably took care of all that for you. But it's like, so I was just sitting here thinking, you never know. And so that makes you really have to think about and plan accordingly for your personal life, right? You know, you can't wait to the last minute thinking you've got time to get something this done or that done, because you don't know if you will or not, because you may get called out.
Right. Yeah. It's you're always ready. There's always a sense in the back of your mind something may happen, right? So you're just, if you can make it, you make it. You make every effort to take care of it. You know, and it's like going in on the Christmas or the Thanksgivings or Easters or Mother's Days, whatever it is. You know, I've done a ton of that, and we all have. But it's like I've told my wife, and I know these guys do the same thing. If our lights are out, don't you want somebody to come take care of it?
Yeah.
Whether it's, you know, Christmas or Easter or Mother's Day, whatever it is. I mean, obviously, if we have a problem, you would want that same. So it's just, you just got to kind of wear that mantle and go do what you need to do, you know?
As we go forward in this episode two in our series, I want you to really think, all of our listeners out there, just hear Dusty's description of those days over Christmas, so that when we're sitting at home and our power's out and we're growing impatient and we're getting frustrated, go back to Dusty's words and think about that day. Think about the time where he doesn't sleep. 20-hour day, like family people we are, he's away from his wife, he's away from his kids. And think about the fact that maybe he's sitting in a truck somewhere in sub-zero temperatures and maybe gets a 10-minute micro nap at best, or none at all. Please think about that. When we're looking at our outage maps and we're sitting there in frustration, think about the numbers that you see on an outage map when it's at its worst and we're above 3,600 or 4,000 over here in this county, or it's 8,000, or heaven forbid, it's even bigger than that. Around Christmas time, we were seeing that. Rolling blackouts. Think about Junior's words. Think about Dusty's words and Eric's words coming up here in this series. My friend, fun question coming back around to you. It's going to be tough to top Joplin, but there's all kinds of experiences that you've had. What would be Dusty Smith's most challenging day since you've been with Liberty?
I'd say we've already hit on it, to be honest with you, just because when you're that cold and trying to get work done, it's very difficult, because you're talking 10, 15 minutes, you know, before you get out there. And I had insulated gloves on and everything that I could, you know, but your hands start going numb, you know, and even with the gloves on, you start to lose like your pinky and ring fingers, you know, you start to feel that tingling coming on, and, you know, I've got to get somebody's lights back on, you know, so I'll jump back in the truck for a little bit, try to warm up real quick, you know, and the thing is you got to take all that stuff off, the heavy layers, and you get into the truck, because you don't want to get in there with the heat on, keep all that on, and get back out and get
then
hypothermia, right? Because that's how that happens. So you just, there's a lot of that going into it, right? So that was probably the worst day, without a doubt. And I mean, the wind chills were just brutal. I mean, just cutting through you, you know, and you're trying, a lot of our stuff, we have to run instruments from the ground with a 40-foot stick, you know, and I don't know about you, but if you've ever tried to hold something straight still in the 30-40 mile an hour winds, and
it ain't gonna happen.
It's not gonna happen, right? It's good kite weather, but not really holding still weather.
My word.
You know?
So, and this is, again, I'm for everybody listening to this series, I'm asking these questions that probably we've all thought about, but we've either never had the opportunity to ask, or we just don't think about it because we're caught up in our own daily lives. When I'm looking at an outage map, Dusty, and I'm seeing squares, triangles, circles, and then I'm seeing a number attached to it, and it says 8,000 or it says 15,000, when you guys are looking to restore power for us as customers, and I don't want it to draw it out or have too much of a long answer, but how does that happen? I mean, I'm assuming that there are areas that are fenced in and there are large boxes and you are out there in all manner of conditions working on that particular area. Are there multiples of those locations that impacts all of that 8,000 or that big diamond we see on the outage map?
Sure, absolutely. So think of it in simple terms, like in your house, right? So you may not have power to certain parts of your house. Like say you've got a breaker that trips, right? And
yes,
so
sir.
Maybe it takes out your laundry room, a bathroom, and maybe the hallway. Everything else is good, right? But everything on that is out on that particular breaker. And then the thing about it is it may be only one little switch, right, where there's a little nick in the wire, but that switch actually just faulted, but it takes out everything sympathetically on that circuit, right? So not your whole house is out, right? But that's how it works with us. We could have one structure become a problem, but because of the way the system's set up, right, it could affect a lot more things. And then we could have multiple areas with multiple structures or issues, right? And then so it just kind of cascades. And then our restoration efforts, we always go in and we try to attack the trunk line, which is to get as much on as possible, as safely as possible, that way that we can get it on quickly, and then we start working everything else after that, trying to, you know, we want to get those numbers down as fast and as safely as possible. But basically, the way things are tied together, it's not just typically one house or, you know, two houses. It's when we have those big storms and things like that, it's going to have a daisy chain effect where, okay, it took out a three-phase circuit. That's a lot more than just one street, you know, because that circuit goes a long way. We've got miles and miles of line. So,
Pam, so far, how do you feel about these questions and answers? These boys are giving us a clinic, an education. These
are
all things that I've never been privy to. I've thought about it in my imagination, but it only goes so far.
Yeah, because, and again, the whole purpose for this podcast, right, is to understand, you know, when we think of a line, then we think of you up in a bucket, right? You know, I
yes.
mean, seriously,
yes.
that because that's what all the pictures and stuff are.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't think about that 30, 40 foot pole trying to, you know, to work from the ground or whatever, or, and we don't understand, well, their electricity over there is on, why isn't ours on? So now we know why. We know the why now, right? Sure. Because you're not in that chain, right? Or whatever. So, I just, again, I appreciate what you guys do. And don't ever think that I enjoy having a power outage at my house, because I don't. But I just want us to remember there's a lot of work that goes on that people never even think of. And
nope,
so the whole point of this podcast is for us to understand the backstory, right, of what all goes on, the sacrifices that you guys make. And, you know, I still kind of think y'all have to be just a little bit, you know, off, you know, just a little bit
oh,
that
no.
you would want to even
like
do this
are.
Stuff.
Yeah,
so.
You're right on. There's definitely some screws loose, you know, and that's one thing I did want to, I wanted to mention too, is it's not just, you know, we think of the storms and we think of the rolling blackouts and things like that. It's not just that. I mean, we have structure fires we roll on, we have car accidents, we, you know, there's people that have it's a myriad of issues. It's not necessarily just, oh, there's a tornado or, you know, straight line winds. You know, I wish it was that way, but we have, you know, oftentimes somebody will just have an oops and be, you know, off the road, and then here we go. It took down
a pole. What
about
squirrels?
God rest their soul.
this is the fun part for Dusty.
Yeah.
Did you see how quickly he said God rest the squirrel's soul?
Yeah. Squirrels and birds can definitely cause some problems.
Chewing on power lines,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, you know, crazy critters, I guess. Maybe they all want to be linemen too.
Ted Martin would appreciate this, but he was our first nominee and was in episode one for this new series, and we got a chance to talk to him. And now that prompts another curious question for me before we introduce Eric. House fires. I'd imagine a house goes up. If the structure's completely lost, there are lines going to the home. How does that involve you guys? And are you guys involved with the majority of those calls that go out through fire?
Yes, actually, we have. There's a lot of times that we have working relationships with a lot of the fire personnel. We're used to seeing them. Anytime there's a structure fire, whether it's commercial or residential, right? The first thing they want is they contact whoever the utility provider is, because they want us to de-energize the building, right? And so sometimes it's fully engulfed. We can't necessarily get to the meter to remove that, right? So at that point, we've got to disconnect at our service pole, right, wherever that is, and isolate that building that way. That, again, kind of like the Australia thing, the firefighters like, we got enough trying to hurt us right now. This is dangerous enough. And I can tell you, firefighters and police, they don't really like electricity. If there's a wire down, they're like, no, we're not going near that. And I don't blame them, because I wouldn't want to if I didn't know what was going on, you know. So we definitely get involved in a lot of that. But yes, we want to isolate the building for them and remove, you know, mitigate one more risk. So
Dusty, I just want to say I'm thrilled. I'm honored. I love the insight. You're definitely a very solid pillar and a foundation amongst the Liberty family. I appreciate the fact that you got into your career. You've given us 7 good years. I'm appreciative of your family letting you go every single day and go out and out of the field. And just thank you for keeping us safe, warm, keeping our electrical grid going, restoring power quickly like you do, and just having that good ethic. I can't say thank you enough. That's awesome.
You are awesome, and I'll say a little prayer for you when that boy walks up on that stage to get that diploma, because you're going to be sitting there crying just a little bit.
He's going to be bawling. Dusty, to wrap up, I'd love you to have the honor to introduce Mr. Eric to us, and then we'll have him come up and we'll get into his story as well, sir.
Okay, yeah, great. So Eric White, he's our line operations manager here in Hollister, and he's running the show and coordinating everything over there at our shop in Hollister, and basically takes care of the whole area. We've got roughly, I think it's like 29, almost 30,000 meters down here. So there's a pretty big scope for him to keep track of. So, yeah, he's the big dog behind the desk, so I'll let him have it.
All right. Come on up here, Eric White. Part of the Emergency Worker podcast series continuing on. And I call this the Liberty Pyramid today, Pam,
yes.
because We've got three incredible gentlemen in here and three great stories to get into to really, I tell you what, define patience, dedication, hard work, and it's given us a better understanding of what goes on the other side of the grid, on the other side of us being frustrated about a power outage. But Eric White, welcome to episode two in this series, my friend. Buddy, you have had two good stories to come behind.
Oh, I know. It'll be tough.
First things first, just give me your impression of these two guys. I mean, talk about amazing stuff. That really, really good to hear. What do you think so far?
Well, I think that without these gentlemen, it wouldn't happen. I mean, it's, I am just up there, like Dusty said, I'm just pushing pieces around. These men like Dusty, our linemen, our foremen out there in the field, they are the backbone. They are what everyone sees. Like I said, without them, we wouldn't have anything.
Yeah.
And Junior here, he coordinates a lot of this, as far as, our public image out here. Like he said, if we have any issues with anyone, they're chewing on his ear. Mostly, he filters through a lot of the chewings before they get to me. he takes the brunt of a lot of that.
Yes,
very helpful. I mean, I would say probably Dusty takes the first chewing, and then to Junior, then to me. Initially,
you're kind of that last stop for the sounding board, right?
That's what I try for.
Yes. Well, it seems to me like you guys are doing it very, very well. And Pam, I've tried to ask some different questions of these boys. I'm going to do that now with Eric. First things first, and this is a similar question the other boys have had. How long with Liberty, since you got started in your work all the way up to manager, how long have you had with the company so far?
I'm almost 10 years.
10 years?
Yeah.
So almost a decade.
Almost.
And were you always here in Ozark Mountain Country, Hollister, Branson area, or did you relocate in out of state?
Yes, I've always been here for the most part.
Local boy, I love it.
Local boy.
My wife, she's fourth generation Taney County resident.
Oh my gosh.
So, it's my wife says I'm a third generation Liberty employee. Her grandfather worked for Empire and retired. Her father also worked for Empire as well. And now there's me. I maybe that's why she married me. I don't know.
So I don't feel like funny or weird saying this to Eric. It's safe to say electricity is in your blood.
I believe so.
So I mean, what did you do before Liberty, and what was the draw and the allure to join up in the electrical field?
Well, I actually I was a lineman for the communications. I contract from the local phone company.
Okay.
So I've always been here since I'd done that since I was 18, and I'd put my application in with Empire, with the other local utilities, just trying to get your foot in the door, and it just happened one day.
So Pam, Eric started young at age 18. So, yeah. I mean, to me, There's not a lot of kids that would go into or be looking for a career at that young of age. That's a rare thing. You don't always hear about that. Was that a drive you just had, or did that come down from dad or mom? Where did that come from? You started young.
Yeah, that kind of came from my dad. He was actually a local carpenter, and he pushed me and pushed me and said, "You do not want to do this."
Did he really?
Yeah, he said a friend of his worked for the phone company and said, "That is the career. That do something different."
Yes.
And I started, and I enjoyed it. I've always enjoyed climbing the poles, and being outside and that type of work, and it was neat. I mean, these guys know it. I mean, it's different. When you become a lineman, you are doing something different than anyone else. It's not driving nails. It's not driving a truck. It's something that most people, when they see you and you're up in that bucket truck, you're 50 to 100 foot in the air, you're doing something that no one else can do, or at least they feel like no one else can do. And
and I'm surprised this question didn't come up until now, but you talk about 50 to 100 feet in the air, and I think about our guys that go up and they paint the radio towers, and I know the type of money those guys are making, because there's hardly anybody in the world that'd be willing to go up that high in the air. Let me just ask you this. I mean, doing that type of work, I mean, how do you How do you get your head wrapped up mentally in the game to go up there? I mean, being afraid of heights is one thing, but the work is not easy. How do you find the mindset, first and foremost? What works for you? How did you develop that?
You just, for the most part, your world is no further away than your arm's reach.
Yeah.
You cannot focus beyond that. Mm-hmm. Anything beyond that is that fear. When you are just concentrating on what is here, what you can control, that's it.
I mean, everything else just kind of goes away.
Yes, everything else does go away. You focus your mind on your work and what you're doing. And like I said, this is what you can control, and the rest is in God's hands, you know.
What do you think of that? I like that. I like that response and reply a lot.
I love that. I mean, you know, and I think sometimes we all need to remember, focus on what you can control, right?
Yeah.
Don't be thinking about
there. That's advice I could tell myself right
yes.
now.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So let me, because Dusty, when we were talking with him, he laid out some just, and I'm going to go ahead and use the term, and it's a podcast so I can get away with it, hellacious conditions over Christmas time. And just, I mean, obviously you've worked your way up through the ranks. You've been out there, you've been working, you've had those days. Eric, what day really pushed you? I want to say this, to go outside your box, to go outside your limits. What day tested your mettle the most, would you say, to this point in your 10 years?
I would say this past Christmas.
This past Christmas?
Yes, because I've just been in this position as operation, you know, manager of operations just since early December. So mm-hmm. it seemed like I was just thrown into the fire, you know, and these guys, you know, in one hand, I was thankful I wasn't out there because I was out there. Me and Dusty, we spent several hours together just, 2 years prior when we had the big freeze.
Yeah, yeah.
So...
Left me hanging this year.
Yeah, I did leave you hanging this year. Yeah. Yeah. But that was probably my toughest so far anyway, especially in this position. It was just, like I said, just thrown in the fire. There's the phone going off. Just nonstop. There's the radio's going in the background as far as the CB radio.
Yeah.
You know, people calling in trying to coordinate what's going on. You got the outages. You've got, you know, aside from the customers calling in and I've also got people over my head calling me and wanting to know what's going on and how can we get this fixed? And in the same time, we're trying to keep these guys safe. You know, like we've discussed earlier, they've been up for hours upon hours. You know, they should be asleep by now. Any normal person would be asleep, and they're not. And a lot of times they're not. Like we was talking earlier, there's not time for that little power nap. We're not, you know, like I've got some friends that work for, the fire department, the ambulance department. And they put in some long hours as well. But they get their breaks. You know, when we go into work, when we start the work, we start it and we continue until it stops. It's that, mm-hmm. that 24-hour
period
remarkable. is nonstop.
Can I ask you a question?
Please.
You said something about this was your first experience not being able to be out on the line, right?
Yes.
When you went in and you were thrown in the fire. I just have to ask you, did you, because you knew what these guys were doing out in the cold and everything, did you feel a little guilty because you wasn't out there helping them?
I still feel guilty.
Yeah. 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 I can see that in you. I know, you know, I've kind of felt the same way when I went and worked from home during COVID.
Yeah.
And I just had this most overwhelming sense of guilt because other people had to go in, right? And so it was this stress and this burden. And I could just hear that when you said that, it was just a little thing you said, but I could hear in your voice, I could just hear how that impacted you because you're thinking, I'm getting set inside, out of the weather, and my friends, my buddies, my coworkers are out there facing these horrible conditions. Can you tell just in a couple words, I mean, how'd that make you feel?
Like I said, it made me feel guilty. I mean, you're... made me feel like I have to make it up to them somehow. Mm-hmm. You know, whether that's,
I try and make it as easy on them as I can. Mm-hmm. You know, try not to push beyond what needs to be done. If, you know, if I'm, you know, and try and keep an open eye. If I see somebody faltering or what, you know, then we will take care of it. We'll send them home, you know, let them get the rest that they need. And it's trying to, it makes me more so look to try and balance these guys out as far as having not allowing them to work so many hours and making them take that time off to have someone else replace them, and trying to balance it out more.
Tough balance.
And I want to go back in the day, because, I mean, the field is one aspect of it, but being at the office is something totally different, and it's a different level of pressure and stress. And you kind of alluded to that as well. And I'm go back to Christmas time, and I'm thinking about that day and thinking about the call volume coming in there. You've got calls coming from all directions. That period of time, I want to start with this question first. How many active linemen were out at that point? Do you know off the top of your head what that number would have been?
What we have?
I know Dusty's one.
Yeah, I'm wanting to say we had, in our area, we had at least 10 out at that time.
Now, I'm going to frame this up,
and we also have electricians that operate our substations were out as well.
Okay.
That's down
here. Relay guys were out.
Yeah, our relay guys.
So start with that number of 10 for all of our listeners that are listening to this episode right now. Keep that number in your mind, and let me go back to the office for a second. What was the call volume like in the office coming through that had to be managed? You had to keep your eyes on your crew out in the field. What was that like back in the office on a stress level? What kind of call volume was coming through there over that period of time? And trying to think of an exact number, but just give us, I mean, in the course of an hour, I mean, how consistent was
it? I would say in the course of an hour, there was probably at least a phone call at least every 5 minutes, just a phone call. And then we would also, between that phone call, have to get on the radio to relay to these men out in the field. So it was pretty, we was hopping.
We think about 5 minutes, but just think about that. And you've got people that are having to answer those phones. One call is going to be longer than another. People can't get through, so it goes in a loop. They continue to try to call through. You're having to keep eyes on, knowing where your crew's at. And then I can imagine for you, let me just take the stress level up a notch for Eric back in the office. The worst call I would imagine you could ever get is during this whole process, whether it had been Dusty or anybody else out there in the field, somebody has an accident on a pole. There is an electrical incident, or heaven forbid, the conditions are bad and you get a call back in the office and one of your workers, a truck or a car has gone off the road. I can't imagine. That's got to be in the back of your mind every day as well.
That is in the back of my mind every day. That is and I'm hoping that is in the back of everyone's mind that's out there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's we try and instill a safety mind here at Liberty that we don't want to have those accidents. That we try and make it to where we want to think about it as every accident is preventable. We know for a fact that not everything is preventable. Some things are out of our hands, but we can do everything in our power to prevent these accidents. If that's as little as putting a cone out in front of our truck, that way maybe that bright orange will catch somebody's eye, you know, and make them avoid it. To wearing the hard hats, to putting on the gloves. I mean, that's just little things, you know, you want to do everything you can to keep anything from happening. And that is in the back of my mind every day. And we implement a safety meetings. We try and do them at least every week, you know, and we all just discuss on what things that we have come across and things that we have seen out in the field. It doesn't even have to pertain to our jobs. It's just something to make everyone in our work group aware. Cause we're more like a family. I mean, when you think about it, we spend more time with one another than we do our own families. I mean, your
holidays, birthdays,
absolutely,
you name it. You
absolutely.
Guys.
I mean, if you work, I mean, I'm sure you all do as well. If you work 8 hours a day, you know, you are home for how long with your family before you go to bed?
Right.
You know? I had one of those days yesterday. It was a 15-hour day, and I was up for like 2 hours before I went to bed.
Right.
At best.
Right.
I had my next question in my head just a second ago, and it drifted off into the cloud because I got lost on Eric's wonderful words there just a second ago. Yes, I have it now, and I want to bring this up because we are in an area, Pam, that sees 7 to 10 million visitors unique throughout the course of a year. And Branson has had astounding growth since I moved to the area. And I came here very, very young. Pam's known me since I was a little kid. Pam, you would agree with me that Branson has grown by leaps and bounds. The early 90s was an example of
yes.
that. And now we're courting multi-million dollar businesses to come to the area. Eric, I'd love you to just speak on this. Looking at all the growth that the area has seen, we're talking about new homes being built, these multi-million dollar businesses coming to the area. How has growth of the city and the surrounding counties impacted how you handle your business and how you adjust to it on the daily? What's that been like for you just dealing with the growth that happens around you?
It's hard to coordinate. I mean, it seems like with all this growth, everybody wants it yesterday.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. That sounds accurate, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's not just in the power industry.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, and like I said, everybody wants it yesterday. It's a matter of, that's a tough one. I would just say that, you know, if it wasn't for some people like Junior here that kind of coordinate and keep some of the wolves at bay, you know, with all the growth, we push through what we can. We've tried to we upgrade our lines. What we can, our system, our equipment and whatnot to try and handle this growth. Cause this was all originally built, it's built for something smaller, mm-hmm. and we've grown and grown and grown. I mean, if we were all here for quite some time, we can remember when the strip pretty much ended right up there at 165,
Yeah. There was a lot more trees up there too.
Yeah.
I remember that.
And it's just continually grown. We've added some substations, upgraded some wire and stuff just to try and handle that. And it's, and all this growth as well is kind of what has caused, like, over this past winter, the blackouts that we did have, it's kind of a repercussion of that. It's just, you have so much there and so much load, so much draw and need, we're in a constant game of catch up, with our system, and it's like that, I believe, across the whole nation. It's just,
you always hear some stories here and there about, is the grid going to be sustainable? What is it? Is it going to work? Is it going to be able to handle this or that?
Right.
Climate change, it all goes hand in hand. And what can we do to be prepared for that? And for us, I mean, we got a lot of people. I mean, that tourist volume is one thing, but just think about the percentage of the tourists that come through the Branson area and they fall in love with the place and then they're shopping.
Yeah.
And they want to come here and they want to stay. They want to relocate.
That's
here.
Right.
And we have to be ready for that on the daily.
Right. Yeah.
So how important is it, and this is just a fun question because I think about all your respective journeys going up through the journeyman apprenticeship, getting started in the field, and tying that back to growth. As we get bigger, more homes are built, more businesses come here. How important is it to speak to the youth of the area that have heard these stories, have gained a new appreciation, or have developed an interest as a result of this episode to get involved, have that discussion with mom and dad or their significant other, and get started and work their way through the program? How important is that for you guys?
It is very important. Trade schools, that's what drives our workforce for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. And, don't give up. Once you get that, like I said, the trade schools, if the youth can go to that, start small, get a job, do anything you can, and just stick with it. Don't give up. I mean, it's, I'm a prime example of that as far as trying to get on with like a company like Liberty, mm-hmm. just keep at it, and it happens. I mean,
it does.
That's Pam and Eric makes a very good point. That's why our vocational schools and Gibson Tech, they are so important. And if you want it, go after it. I think we've made a strong case, Pam, in episode 2 with our Liberty Pyramid, if you will, our three boys here that are our nominees with wonderful stories, Eric White, Junior Shook, and Dusty Smith, that if you want to get into this field, there is rewarding work that is found every single day that deserves to be talked about. You are protecting, really, our property. You are keeping us safe. You're keeping us warm. You're a part of the community's growth. And these three guys exemplify drive, passion, gift, dedication, and time.
Yes.
All very big.
Yes. You can tell they're from Ozark Mountain Country.
Yes, they are.
You got the heart for it.
On behalf of Arvest Bank, Pam Yancey, myself, I just want to say again, thank you to Eric White, Dusty Smith, Junior Shook. Gentlemen, thank you for being here on this episode and giving us a wonderful, just a little bit over an hour of great stories. You have enlightened us. You've opened our eyes. And the community, I feel, is going to be strongly in agreement. It is good to know the work that goes behind the scenes to help us calm down a bit, take a breath, and understand what goes behind the scenes when we have a power blip or an outage. They are putting in the work. Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate that.
Thank you from the bottom of my heart. Thank you to all of you.
Thank you.
Folks, I will remind you, if you like these stories out there, you know of somebody that is in the emergency field, fire, police, our line crew, our first responders, on the electric side of things, I will tell you, a nomination is just a click away. It is BransonPodcastNetwork.com under Arvest Bank. Put that in the search field. The nomination form is right there at the top. And episodes are going to start appearing on the podcast network. That's going to be coming down on Wednesdays is what we're going to be shooting for. And keep in mind, our first nominee will be coming out. His story, our own fire chief, Ted Martin. This podcast would not be possible, again, without the great leadership and team at Arvest Bank and Pam Yancey. This is the Heart of the Emergency Worker podcast series, Branson Podcast Network. Have a great day.